This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Author Joseph Cummins joins us on the long line from his office in New Jersey. He is the author of the new book, Anything for a Vote, Dirty Tricks, Cheap Shots, and October Surprises in U.S. Presidential Campaigns. Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Coy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, I was telling you before we went on the air, I interview lots of authors, lots of books come across this table here, and this is, I will tell you, this is such a fun book, and people have been passing it around here at the station. Everybody's looking at it. We're going to give away a copy here to a listener here in a few minutes.
Oh, that's great.
Very, very cool book. And how to describe it? It really takes you campaign by campaign throughout the history of presidential elections.
Yeah, it does. I mean, in other words, it starts in 1789, and it goes all the way up to 2004. And, you know, the whole impetus for writing it was, I think, after 2000 and 2004, and you know, I was watching all the pundits sort of wring their hands and talk about wondering, after all the dirty tricks, you know, whether democracy was in decline and how was the American political system going to survive all this nastiness and the swift boat veterans for truth and all this other stuff. And I said to myself, I said to my editor, more to the point, I said, you know what, why don't I go back and take a look at every presidential campaign in American history and see whether presidential politics is getting dirtier and dirtier? And, of course, the answer, to my satisfaction anyway, was, in fact, no, it's not getting dirtier. It's always been this dirty in American presidential politics.
It is amazing, an amazing story. If we can, let's go back to 1800, a pivotal election in American history, one of probably, if you had to count on one hand, the most pivotal, important elections in American history. They're all important, but
it's extraordinarily important. I have a list of the top 10 dirtiest American elections, and of course 1800 is important not just for that, but it also is only the fourth American presidential election, and already the two parties are going at it, the two recently formed parties are going at it tooth and nail. And of course, one of the reasons why it was such a contentious contest was that it featured the Federalist John Adams, who was running against his own vice president, who was the Republican, of course, Thomas Jefferson. And because of the way the electoral system was set up, this was before the popular vote came in and only the Electoral College voted, basically what you had was the chance that you might have a president with a vice president of a different party. And this is what had happened in 1796. And this would be a bit like having, say, you know, Mitt Romney with Barack Obama as his vice president. You really don't want to go there, you know. But they went there. And it began in 1800. You know, previous to that, the elections, you know, they might get kicked off maybe 100 days before the actual election day. But in 1800, things started really hopping up as much as a year beforehand. And you just knew that these two parties, there's hardly any two parties in American history that really hated and reviled each other as much as the Federalists and the Republicans. So immediately you had a situation, for instance, where on the one hand, Jefferson uses the service of the infamous hack writer James Callender to assail Adams in pamphlets, calling him a repulsive pedant, calling him a hideous hermaphroditical character that is neither a man nor a woman. But in the meantime, you know, Jefferson is getting it pretty good, because from the standards of the Federalists, Jefferson is a free thinker and an atheist and someone who, you know, supports the French Revolution, or the terror even of the French Revolution. So he's, you know, there's a Connecticut newspaper that wrote at the time, are you prepared to see your dwellings in flames if Jefferson is elected? Are you prepared to see female chastity violated and your children writhing on the pike? You know, great God of compassion and justice, shield our country from such destruction.
Amazing.
Absolutely. This is the rhetoric that is going on. And, of course, we see similar rhetoric throughout American history. But this was really the first time when I think it rose full-blown. And it was quite a battle, which, you know, as you know, it ended up as a tie, really. And not between Adams and Jefferson, but between
Adams and Burr.
And Jefferson.
Jefferson and Burr, yeah, of course.
Yes, exactly. And this was fascinating, because now it goes into the House of Representatives. Once again, we're only in the fourth presidential campaign in American history, and it's finally decided after something like 36 ballots or something like this, and the election is finally decided in Jefferson's favor, but I think you may find some historians who think that Jefferson may have made a deal in order to win this election.
A deal with Hamilton?
A deal with Hamilton, or basically a deal to toss a few bones to the Federalists.
Yeah. Right, and of course, that would have, in Jefferson's view, that would have been the deal with the devil.
Yes, exactly, and of course, we don't know this for sure, because most of the dealings during these 6 days or whatever it was of deliberations, you know, went on sort of in the back rooms of taverns, and who knows, but I think some of his subsequent policies indicated that quite possibly he did.
And just by way of a very quick clarification, because not a lot of people in Charlottesville know this, but not everybody knows this. When we talk about Jefferson being a Republican, the party, of course, was at the time was known as the Democratic Republicans,
yes,
which became the Democratic Party.
Yes, exactly. In fact, when you're really sort of almost the opposite of what we're, I shouldn't say that, but it was the more liberal side of things, whereas the Federalists were probably the more conservative central government side of things.
Right. So. And on the left side was folks like Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, and on the right were people like Washington, Adams, and certainly Hamilton.
That's correct. In other words, the founding fathers had sort of split along those lines, and you might almost call it the aristocracy versus sort of a populist movement, although certainly Jefferson was an old line gentleman himself.
Right, right.
In terms of his leanings.
We're talking with author Joseph Cummins. The new book is Anything for a Vote. Joe, tell us about some of these other campaigns that when you started doing your research, you may have been even surprised yourself about how dirty they could get.
Well, I surprised myself, you know, a good deal. Of course, there's many famous campaigns in American history, but for instance, the campaign of in 1964 between Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was the president and the Democrat, and the Republican Barry Goldwater was extremely dirty in a way that I didn't expect, because all I really can remember about that election, I was a teenager when it was occurring, was that it was a lopsided victory for Johnson. But in fact, Johnson set up a committee of people who, 16 people who reported directly to two of his White House staff members, who were devoted to a concerted attack of dirty tricks on Barry Goldwater, to wit, writing hundreds of letters to the columnist Ann Landers, purporting to be from ordinary citizens who were terrified at the notion of a Goldwater candidacy, of influencing a well-known American financial columnist at the time to write at least two columns which portrayed the idea of Barry Goldwater becoming president and a recession happening soon afterwards, even to the extent of sending out publishing comic books or coloring books for children, which portrayed Goldwater in the robes of the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, my Lord.
I mean, they left no stone unturned, into the much larger issue of sending E. Howard Hunt, the CIA agent who figured later in Watergate, into the Goldwater campaign to become a worker for Goldwater and steal his policy speeches, which Hunt did, and sent them back to the Johnson White House.
No kidding. My gosh, I had never heard of that.
It's incredible stuff, and the interesting thing is that I think had this happened later, I think Johnson might have been impeached, but at that point, the press was possibly a bit more quiescent in terms of presidents, and gave him a bit of slack. But there were a lot of people who knew about this in both parties, and Richard Nixon was one, and it might have been one motivating factor for his behavior. As he said later about Watergate, well, as far as he was concerned, it was just another political bugging.
And, of course, speaking of Richard Nixon, in a previous election, 1960, that he lost against JFK, Harry Truman, former president, had advised voters that if they do go vote for Richard Nixon, they might go to hell.
They just might go to hell. I mean, he was pulling out all stops and said, your afterlife is involved here. You better not vote for the guy. A lot of people voted for him, though, and that's one of the very close elections in American history that many people feel is still too close to call. You know, there are so many wonderful elections. 1876 is of course, heads my list of the dirtiest presidential campaigns, and this was between the Republican Rutherford B. Hayes and the Democrat Samuel Tilden. Hayes was a Civil War hero. Tilden was the New York Democrat and crusading DA. And this got so nasty. I mean, Tilden accused Hayes, who was a teetotaler, of getting drunk one night and shooting his mother. Hayes accused Tilden, who was a bachelor, you know, and it's always hard in American history to be a bachelor and run for president, as Jefferson found out, of having a venereal disease from consorting with women of the night in New York City.
Oh, Lord.
And the whole thing came down to a very narrow popular victory on a impending victory on election night by the Democrats, and the Republicans went into action, and in three states, Louisiana, Florida, and South Carolina, they actually changed the electoral vote count to toss the victory to Hayes, which caused no end of controversy in a number of commissions later on, as they were sort of fighting to, the Democrats were fighting to basically regain their victory. And unfortunately, what happened was that they finally made a deal which gave Hayes the victory, but he had to give up something, and what he gave up was the Reconstruction efforts in the South. And so what we then saw was, I think, you know, the civil rights being set back by a good 50 to 100 years in the South after the election of 1876.
Because of that election in 1876, yeah.
I think it's not solely because, but I think it certainly contributed to it by precipitously pulling federal troops out of the South and by putting a Democrat in his cabinet at a time when, you know, Civil War fever still ran pretty high, only, what, 9 years? 9 years later, 10 years later. So.
Yeah, the original Southern, the original deal with the South that predates, you know, Nixon and Thurman.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's always been a lot of dealings like that in the South, or there were up until, I should say, the 1960s.
And that 1876 election, the night of the election, when the results were coming back over telegraph here in Charlottesville, and this was true around the country. The results led to, you know, mob fighting in the streets, and little old Charlottesville was no different. There was a huge brawl out here on West Main Street.
Well, I didn't realize that. I mean, between, I knew about the mob. I didn't realize Charlottesville was a part of it. Wow.
Oh, yeah, between university students who were pulling for Tilden and local mostly African-American Republicans who were pulling for Hayes.
Yeah,
and
well,
they were fighting in the streets with guns and rocks, and the police had to come out and escort the students back up to the university to get them out of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, that is typical, because there was a great deal of racial strife during that particular election because black voters had just been received their franchise, and the Democrats did not want them to vote, if possible, and sometimes tried at gunpoint to keep them away from the polls. And the Republicans did want them to vote, and sometimes attempted to push them at gunpoint to the polls. So it was a no-win situation in some way for the African Americans who had just been relatively recently freed from slavery.
We're talking with author Joseph Cummins. The new book is Anything for a Vote, one of the most interesting books, folks, that I have come across in a long time. Really captivating. You can just pick it up, open it up anywhere, and it really is quite fascinating. Joe, let's turn to some of the more recent presidential elections.
Sure.
And get your insight into, you know, let's just talk about the very last one in 2004, Bush versus Kerry. What was your take on that?
Well, you know, in some ways, 2004 is what gave me the impetus to write the book, because, you know, you had the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, you know, an attack against John Kerry, which was a very effective a smear job against Kerry. But you also had Ohio in 2004. Many people still feel that Ohio was stolen from John Kerry in 2004, and with Ohio, in other words, the presidency. And what you had in 2004, really, in Ohio, was an example of the kind of thing that we can see today in terms of possibly stealing elections. In other words, in the 1880s, the way they might steal an election half the time is they'd send a bag man down with a couple hundred grand in a satchel, and they'd start buying votes on the street, $2 a vote. These days, I don't think they do that. What they do is some of the more sophisticated techniques used by J. Kenneth Blackwell, who was the Secretary of State and also co-chair of the Republican campaign in Ohio in 2004. And basically, they're targeted at minorities in cities who might be more likely to vote Democrat. So you have registered letters being sent to certain zip codes, which are definitely inner-city zip codes, in which saying that the recipient has to identify himself and make sure this is his or her correct address. And if this registered letter isn't signed for, this person is stricken from the polls. You've got techniques where it's alleged anyway, especially, but by John Conyers, who was the head of a House committee who investigated this, that he opened fewer, Blackwell opened fewer polls in minority areas and neighborhoods in Ohio.
Yeah, and I think
time.
That's pretty well documented, that
yeah,
in Ohio, in the Democratic areas, you could stand in line for 12 hours.
You could stay in line for 12 hours, and conversely, you didn't find this in some of the wealthier suburbs and places where you might not find as many minorities. Blackwell even began to reject voter registrations based on an obscure law about the paper stock that they were being printed
on. The weight of the paper wasn't the white right weight.
Right, it wasn't the cardstock.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And this was actually overturned at the last minute, but not before. Immense chaos was caused, and there's some estimates thousands and thousands of votes were lost. And now, as I said, John Conyers, you can read the report on the Internet, you know, the Republican, the Democratic congressman released a wonderful report on this that I think everybody should read. And I don't know how many people have, but you can find it. And John Kerry has stayed out of this. John Kerry has basically indicated he doesn't want to get into this battle, which is perhaps wise. But I think there's a good argument to be made that that election was stolen in Ohio in 2004.
And the point of it, and the point to make here is not so much that, oh, those evil Republicans stealing the election. It's that this can happen to any candidate of any party in any election in America still today.
Yeah. This is what I want to say. My book is basically a nonpartisan book. Both parties are definitely guilty of dirty tricks at different times in their political history. But yes, Corey, that's exactly what I'm saying. Especially today, with the advent of computerized voting machines, this is the way elections are going to be stolen, via voter ID laws, like the one that's currently before the Supreme Court, the Indiana law. These are the ways that we can really lose our franchise in America, not necessarily through dirty tricks and you know, questioning someone's religious beliefs or something like that. But I think really it's really through disenfranchising voters in a much more sophisticated way than they used to do in the old days.
And the only way it's going to get better is if just average Joes, Joseph, no pun intended, average Joes and Josephines stand up in America today and say, enough, enough. Yep. We want honest elections. We want ethical public servants. And if you're going to get involved in politics, we want them to be clean and fair.
Right. I mean, here's the deal. In 39 out of 50 states in America, the Secretary of State is in charge of tabulating the votes in any federal election. Now, in a good many of those states, the Secretary of State is, as happened in Florida in 2000, the Secretary of State is also the co-chair of that his or her party's campaign. This is a conflict in many ways. And God forbid, I'm the one who knows that politics are partisan, but you have to make sure that the counting of the votes is not partisan.
Joseph Cummins, his new book is Anything for a Vote: Dirty Tricks, Cheap Shots, and October Surprises in U.S. Presidential Campaigns. Joe, thank you so much for writing this book and for joining us this afternoon. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much, Corey. I really appreciate it.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, SevillePodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.